It's Sunday morning, time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Your host, Charlie Potter, here on WGN Radio, and hope you enjoy the show this morning. You know it's over. Winter is over when you hear that wonderful prehistoric sound of sandhill cranes moving north. Just as you do in the fall when you step outside and you hear that prehistoric cackling high above and you look as far into the stratosphere as you can see and you see the cranes moving. And they don't move in Vs. They move in circulars catching the wind. Thermals. You know that winter's coming. One of the great places to watch sandhill cranes or listen to them migrate is in the Fox River Valley, not far from downtown WGN studios here in Chicago. Obviously, the best place in the world to see migrating sandhill cranes is to go to the North and South Platte River in Nebraska, where the largest concentrations on Earth pass through. It's a spectacle. It's a spectacle that's just beyond belief. But short of driving 14 hours to western Nebraska or central Nebraska, you can just drive out to the Fox River. And if you time it right, you'll hear them. And I heard them in just going over crane after crane, flight after flight earlier this week. It was one of those days when spring was hinting, but winter was still, you could tell it hadn't quite left earlier this week. And I stepped out of my car and I heard that high cackling and I looked up. And I won't try to imitate a crane because I can't do it very well. And as far as I could see, 5,000-7,000 feet in the air, there they were. And they were 50 of them in a bunch. And they travel in a circle. And then they move forward as that thermal pushes them. And a few minutes later, here came another group behind them. And then another group behind them. And another group behind them. And then another. And over the course of an hour and a half or 2 hours, as I sat on the bench next to my car, binoculars in hand, sun on the side of my face, just listening, and there they came. You hear them long before you could see them. And then for a period of 3 or 4 minutes, they were in view, and then it was gone, and all was quiet. And then 5, 10, maybe 15 minutes later, you heard another one, and that passed, and then maybe 3 minutes later, you saw another. It's the sure sign. They don't make mistakes. You can turn on the news tonight, and you can listen to the weather, and they can talk about snow. They can talk about whatever they want to talk about. Birds don't make mistakes. And when cranes go overhead, as they were this week, for day after day, they are telling you that winter is over, and hallelujah to that. Spring is on the way, and the Canada geese have been moving, but cranes, to me, are that incredible, majestic notice. The season of spring is upon us. Summer's coming. And the greatest thing about listening to cranes is that in my childhood, in your childhood, if you're listening this morning, unless you're a child, there were very few cranes. Sandhills hardly existed. Their numbers had been diminished for over 100 years. They had been hunted for their feathers. Their habitat had been destroyed. They had been poisoned with agricultural practices. And sandhill crane populations had plummeted. Now, as part of the whole recovery that we're seeing across the continent, DDT, as I often speak about, is leaving our ecosystem. Finally, 30 and 40 years after DDT was last used, it's being cleansed. And you can see it in the population of all kinds of predatory birds, and you can see it in the populations of things like sandhill cranes. Now sandhill cranes are common. In fact, they're so common, there's sandhill crane hunting seasons. It's one of the great conservation success stories. But it has nothing in the case to do with habitat as it does with ducks and quail and geese. The success story for cranes is that we stopped killing them with DDT, and we stopped destroying their habitat, and they had a chance to recover. And now they're plentiful, and as you live anywhere near the Illinois or Fox River Valleys or up in the southern Wisconsin this past week, you knew they're alive and well. It's just a thrilling thing to hear that sound. So if you missed it this year, there might still be a flock or two going through. Get ready for them next fall, but put it on your calendars. Early March next year, or whenever the weather really changes, they're coming. It's worth going to watch them and listen to them. It's one of those things that'll make you really feel like all's right with the world. Moving from cranes, I want to take you as far from, well, long way from the Chicago area, to an experience I had recently, one that spoils me for life, but also one that I think is, for those of you who've ever hunted bobwhite quail, you'll be able to understand what I'm going to talk about. And for those of you who never have, who've only heard, and perhaps most of you listening have never heard the call of a bobwhite quail, the whistle, the unmistakable whistle of a quail, they are, in parts of this country, really numerous. They were at one time very numerous in Illinois. As recently as the 1970s, almost 3 million bobwhite quail were shot in Illinois alone. This past year, less than 200,000. In fact, you could make a lot of money going to Vegas and asking people, which were more plentiful in Illinois, bobwhite quail or pheasants? Everybody would say pheasants. People think of Illinois as pheasant country. The reality is there are more bobwhite quail in Illinois than there are pheasants. There just happened to be a whole lot less of both. But I traveled recently down into the absolute mecca of bobwhite quail hunting, the tall pines country of South Georgia, Northeast Florida, for one of those experiences that you can only have, I guess, very rarely. That is hunting wild bobwhite quail, not released birds, truly wild bobwhite quail in the tall pines of Southeast Georgia, Northeast Florida. It is special. And on a day when there was not a cloud in the sky, temperature moved from the upper 40s into the high 60s, absolutely no wind, we set off on horseback with pointers, and we rode for hours, changing the dogs every 45 minutes. We covered thousands of acres of ground, and we saw something that in Illinois was common but rare today. We saw big numbers of coveys. Big coveys of bobwhite quail. And if you've ever hunted bobwhite quail, wild birds, you know that there may be nothing harder in the world to hit than a bobwhite quail. And if you've never shot them, it is a bird that will change how you view birds in the wild. Because when they explode from a covey rise, it is a whirlwind of feathers. It is birds everywhere, in your face, under your feet. You can't help it. Your pulse stops. You come in behind a pointing dog, and you can just feel your heartbeat going dun 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 dun. Your pace quickens. Your every sense you have is on high alert. And then all of a sudden there is this explosion. You know it's there. You know it is going to come. The dog is standing there. He's got his nose to the ground, his foot in the air, his tail sticking out the back. He is telling you, or she is telling, the bitch is telling you, they are quail right there. And yet you can't see them. And you're not looking at the ground, because if you look at the ground, by the time you look at the ground and they explode into the air, your eyes and head can never move fast enough. So you're looking out in front and you're kind of feeling with your feet because you're not looking down. And you know they're stump holes. You know they're snakes. You know there are all kinds of briar patches to fall over. And you're looking out ahead, and you're walking up behind the dog, and the dog, every muscle on the dog is quivering. And then all of a sudden, from it seems like underneath you, the ground just moves. It explodes with a noise as boom, and as many as 30 quail can take off, 20, 25, in just an incredibly tight pocket. And no matter what you, no matter how well you prepared yourself, you're not ready for it. And there are very few places left on this American continent where you can have that kind of experience. And the tall pine country of Southeast Georgia with wild birds is one of those places. So I found myself in that experience a couple weeks ago with a couple of great friends, riding horses, working with good pointing dogs. And it doesn't matter how many times I've done this. When that covey gets up, everything's a blur. You try to slow down. You say, pick a bird. Just pick one bird. It's impossible. Everything just you go black almost. And I found myself, after doing this for years, walking into a covey saying, one bird, one bird, one bird. It's a mantra. And they get up, and 20 birds are in your face at once, and you go ahead and you try to pick one bird. It is almost impossible. But it's the whole life of quail hunting. It's the whole country. life of the pines and the food, and my gosh, the way the Southern cuisine is prepared, it comes with grease on top of more grease and then butter on top of that. It's a great way to spend a late winter day in America. If you ever have the chance to go do that in the tall pine country of Georgia or North Florida, I highly recommend it. And you don't even have to take a gun. Take a camera. Follow the dogs. And when they get up, you'll be shaking just like a leaf trying to capture one bird. It's one of the great things we have in this world of America, in the conservation hunting world. And in Illinois, we used to have it in spades. We had so many quail, and now we have so few. I'll be back in just a moment with more on the Great Outdoor Show. We'll talk about Namibia and also talk about a public-private partnership that's happening north of the border. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN Radio. First, a message from your Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Winter is here, and it's always tough on the road. But when the going gets tough, the tough get going. And nothing is tougher than the 2016 Chevy Silverado. Silverado is the longest-lasting, most dependable pickup on the road. With all-steel construction, Silverado is built to tame Chicago's winter weather. And Silverado's towing package offers 11,400 pounds of towing capacity. Perfect for hauling your snowmobiles. I love pulling my neighbors out of their snowdrifts. And right now, you can get $7,250 total savings on a 2016 Chevy Silverado All-Star. $7,250. That really warms my heart. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and get all the details. Or head to your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer today and pick up a pickup that works as hard as you do, on the road or off. Chevy Silverado is one tough customer.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. I'm going to take you from the tangled tall pine briar patches of southeast Georgia and the whirling sound of a covey of quail to Namibia. And something has happened there that is, well, it's wonderful if you believe in conservation, land management, and the future of protecting wildlife. And you might, when I move forward now, if I'm going to talk about it, say, well, that doesn't necessarily square, but I'm going to explain why in a second. In Namibia, it is now against the law to introduce legislation that would restrict hunting in the country of Namibia. This was done as a result of the anti-hunting PETA, Humane Society, Sierra Club, cabal, if you will, that has been tormenting people who hunt big game in Africa. A lot of this is a result of what took place with Cecil, the lion, in Zimbabwe, last fall, which we all read about and knew about, and of course the truth will come out on that at some point in time. But it was certainly does not appear to have been the way it was described by a media which did not do its job in checking all the facts. But when it comes to animal rights activism, there's seldom any fact-checking. So Namibia, which is heavily dependent on tourism and hunting for wildlife viewing, they took the proverbial bull by the horns and they said, enough. We are not going to have a Cecil-type situation here in our country. And they made it a law that you cannot pass a law to diminish people's rights to go hunting in the country of Namibia. A year ago, you may recall, it was 2 years ago, you may recall, that I was in Namibia, and I was hunting big game, stalking for hours. I ended up with heat stroke and got terribly sick. It does happen if you're not prepared for the African climate, but it was all about fair chase. And the number of miles that I walked and the whole experience was unbelievable. And in Namibia, the reason they have such outstanding quality game experiences, hunting experiences, because hunting provides for wildlife management. Hunting provides the resources to stop poachers. And in the countries that have outlawed hunting or really restricted hunting, what are they dealing with today? They are dealing with uncontrolled poaching rings. They are dealing with wildlife populations that are spiraling out of control, elephant herds that are destroying all kinds of habitat. Hunting has been the sole means to provide the economic engine for wildlife management and to provide the funding to stop the poaching crime rings that want to cut off the horns of a rhinoceros and chop it up and make it into an aphrodisiac and be sold across Asia. So what Namibia has done is said, we are a country that supports hunting. It's important to our economy. It's essential to the land management of this country. And we are not going to let the extreme anti-hunting views dictate what this country is going to do. And I think you're going to see other countries in Africa step up to do the same thing as it becomes known, really, how important hunting is to wildlife management and conservation. And here in America, we've known this for a long time. We understand the economic importance of hunting and wildlife management as well as societal heritage. I got about a minute and a half left. I'm going to talk quickly about a public-private partnership, which was news in Wisconsin, and that is the state of Wisconsin entering into cooperative agreements with Pheasants Forever and Ducks Unlimited and other groups to manage state lands. And you have to wonder in one context, why do we need a cooperative agreement? Why can't just conservation groups volunteer? Well, because you're dealing with government, you're dealing with bureaucracies. And in Illinois, it's illegal. So one of the things, hopefully, that will happen in Illinois, and Governor Rauner, if you're listening, or if anyone in your team is listening this morning, Wisconsin has just given you the template for how to break through what is this choking restriction on volunteerism in the state of Illinois. I've talked about it before. I'm going to talk a lot more about it as we go on. The whole idea is that individuals should be able to manage and help make state lands better. After all, they are our lands. They don't belong to the state. They belong to the people of the state. In the state of Wisconsin, Pheasants Forever went to the state and said, we have an interest in managing the habitat on a specific state park, which you don't have the money to manage and you don't have the know-how to manage. And they put together an agreement, and the state turned over the management of that state park for pheasants to the stewardship of Pheasants Forever. It's not a complicated process at all. It is one that is little more than common sense, and it's one that's hardly ever practiced. So as we look at the future of Illinois and how we are going to manage our state parks with a state that is absolutely broke, how we're going to manage our wildlife areas, we just can look north of the border. A template's been done. It's there. We can copy it. We can put it to work. But in order to do so, we're going to have to change the labor laws in Illinois to make it so that volunteers can actually fix levees, pick up litter, and do things on our public lands, which, after all, are our lands. When these union contracts and restrictions of volunteerism were put in place, we forgot these lands belong to the people of the state of Illinois. So kudos to the state of Wisconsin for setting an example, and hopefully Illinois follows shortly. Hope you've enjoyed the show. This is Charlie Potter. I'll be back next Sunday morning on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.